Welcome to Eco Living in Action, a half-hour sustainable living show with Maureen Howard. From making your own cleaning products to composting, recycling, keeping chooks and reducing your carbon footprint, Maureen and her guests will inspire you with practical, everyday solutions that make a difference. Eco Living in Action, proudly supported by Sustainable Dunedin City.
Welcome to Eco Living in Action. I'm Maureen Howard, host for this show. Now, how many of you listening consider yourself a grassroots activist? Sound extreme? Not you? Perhaps when you go out walking, you might pick up the litter of strangers, or you sign petitions, go on rallies, introduce recycling at work or school. Whatever it is, if you're trying to change your bit of the world for the better, then you could call yourself an activist. I think it's really a matter of degree. Now, one person who I think definitely fits the label of grassroots activist is Rosemary Penn Worden. Rosemary has a background as a medical laboratory scientist and as a union rep. But in the last 5 years, she has become very actively passionate about the issue of climate change and is active at the grassroots level, opposing fossil fuel extraction in New Zealand and particularly in Dunedin. On this show, recorded on the 24th of February, I talk with Rosemary Penn Worden about her personal journey to activism and what it's like to be an activist, directly opposing big business corporations in the fossil fuel industry in New Zealand. Welcome to the show, Rosemary.
Thank you, Maureen. It's nice to be here.
It's lovely to have you on, and I'm sure you're used to sitting in that seat to a certain extent because you used to have a show, didn't you?
I did it for a whole year, actually, oil-free Otago Radio.
Yeah. You've been involved with several groups here, as I guess in Dunedin and New Zealand, Oil Free Otago and Coal Action Network.
That's right.
How did you get into working in this area or volunteering, I guess, in this area?
Well, it started back in about 2011 when James Hansen, Dr. James Hansen, came to New Zealand. He travelled the country. He got to Dunedin. He was at absolutely exhausted, and he filled I think 4 lecture theatres at Otago University with people, and he had his graphs and he told us the science, and it basically confirmed the worst of my fears, and it kind of paralysed me. And that same year, Jeanette Fitzsimons came through Dunedin. She always fills the lecture theatres when she comes to speak. And she was talking about the lignite mining in Southland and how the government was planning solid energy at that time. We're planning to increase New Zealand's emissions by, could have been up to 20% if everything went ahead, by digging up the Mataura Valley for the dirtiest fossil fuel at that time, lignite coal, the dirtiest coal available. And there was a farmer there who lived in that valley and who'd been quietly trying to fight it. And I just looked at him and I met him, and he was really afraid, and he was alone and angry. And I thought, we can't let this happen. We just can't let this happen. And then a couple of months later, my first grandson was born.
Mm-hmm.
And that was another really big emotional thing for me, just to realise how attached and how in love I was with this new little creature. And at the same time, I was absolutely terrified for his future. So it was about then, I think their timing was beautiful. Coal Action Network got hold of me and asked me to write a little booklet for them that would help them in their campaign against this lignite mining. So I was working with the Social Justice Commission of the Anglican Church, and I wrote this little booklet, and we sent over 30,000 free copies of that booklet around the country. It was one of their sort of biggest non-sellers, if you know what I mean. And basically, writing that booklet, I sort of pushed all my work aside and gave myself a couple of months to be really immersed in everything. And that's all I did for a couple of months, and basically, I was hooked. I was hooked after
right.
that.
Right. Do you consider yourself a grassroots activist? I was a bit bold in the introduction to call you that.
Well, I think you introduced it really well, Maureen, because I think you're a grassroots activist. I think most of us are, most of us who are politically aware and who are trying to do things to make this a better place, we could call ourselves that. And I quite like what the people at Standing Rock call themselves, protectors. I feel like that's my job, to try and protect a future for these little ones coming through. Yeah, my daughter's having another baby in about 6 weeks.
Oh, wow. That's wonderful.
Yeah,
but you're absolutely right. And so, you know, you were asked to do this writing, and that got you into really understanding and writing on this topic. And prior to that, you'd been a union leader, and then prior to, so how did you get into the union leader position?
Well, that was an interesting thing. I got voted as the union rep when I was away one day. I think I was at the dentist. And so I thought, oh, I'll take it on. You never know if you can do something until you try it, eh? It was really tough because it was a time when Dunedin Hospital Laboratory was being privatised and we were being targeted. They tried really, really hard to reduce our terms and conditions at that time, and they tried every trick in the book, really. And we were one of the first laboratories to get privatised in New Zealand. This is a really long story, so I won't go into it. Mm. But I think it was an amazing training ground for me to learn to stand up to something that looks overwhelming and impossible. It's not. Right. It never is. And these people who look huge, and these companies, they look big, but they are vulnerable. And people have amazing power when we stick together.
That is the key, isn't it? Sticking together, you know, to take them on. So, you know, as you say, you had that empowerment now, and you've worked with Oil Free Otago and Coal Action Network. What do you think, even just to give a very brief summary of some of the things that you've done, and what have you been most proud of?
I think with the Coal Action Network, there was a moment when we were having our second summer festival down in Gore, and we had there was a briquette plant which had been built but was not working. It had not produced any briquettes. And we decided to pay them a little visit, but I was the only sort of person who kind of was available to step forward, so I sort of took control of that, and it was the first time I'd been in the front line, so to speak. But all I did, you'll laugh at this, Maureen, all I did was I handed the security guard inside the fence at the briquette plant, I tried to, a basket of home Matara Valley produced vegetables and flowers and fruit. It was a beautiful, beautiful basket. And it was really just to say, hey guys, don't dig it up. Look what we can produce here, and do this instead. And it was kind of fun. It was really fun, actually. They were scared of me.
Yeah.
We had flowers to give them, and they were scared of me. So it was a very strange thing, but I was quite proud of standing up and doing that. I can't think of what else. There's lots of things, Maureen. I'm very proud of the little booklet I wrote. Because
it's very good. I've read it. Yeah.
It made me realise I could call myself a writer, and I do. I do a lot of writing. But more importantly for me is getting over the fear of being in the front line and being that person up the front. Yeah. So when I can do that, I'm very proud of myself.
Absolutely. And you should be, Rosemary. I think it's fantastic. And I think for many of us listening, we are very concerned about climate change. But yeah, standing up and being at the front, that, you know, the fear, it comes.
Yeah.
So in a way, you see, like, your training and being a union leader, that's been helped, you know, little steps to help you do that. And it's just been a gradual process of becoming, of meeting your fear and overcoming it, I guess.
Yes. And also watching others. Especially young people. And I've met in the movement, since I've been involved in the climate movement, I've met the most amazing people that I'd ever want to meet. And they're just ordinary young people, but they're brave. They're brave and they're committed, and they are prepared to really, they're leading the way. And I'm watching them, and I'm learning from them. So that's really exciting for me.
Mm-hmm. And it's their future, so.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I feel such a responsibility to be there, not leave it to them.
And so if anybody was wanting to follow in your footsteps, what kind of advice would you give them? You know, so
I would say find the thing that gives you the most passion, like find your front line. That's what we sort of call it. And in Dunedin, there are so many groups doing such great work. There's the Seniors Climate Action Network here in Dunedin. There's Oil Free Otago, of course, at the university. There's Students for Environmental Action doing great stuff. And there's 350 as well. There's a lot of crossover between those groups here in Dunedin. There's so many things. But the main thing is to get involved in a group and, put yourself forward and say, hey, I want to learn stuff. I want to be there next time you lock yourself to a gate or something like that. If that's what you want to do. Or I've got another friend, Jenny, down in Southland, and she's a great-grandma, and there's no way in the world she's going to go and lock herself to a gate. But that's fine. She knits beanies, and she's there, and she's making food, and she's doing a lot. She's the treasurer of our group in Canna at the moment, and we couldn't do what we do without Jenny. So that's the other thing, too, is there's a job to be done, and there's room for absolutely everybody.
Mm-hmm. So I guess with your writing skills and your oratory skills and bravery to step forward, but as you say, there's a lot of other jobs that need to be done to make a group work well.
They really are.
Yeah. So obviously this has been a big passion for you for the last 5 years and taken up quite a lot of your life. Has it come at a cost for you? You know, like we've been talking about the positive things.
Mm. Well, it's been a really exciting thing for me because I worked for 20 plus years in hospitals and in hospital laboratories, and I travelled overseas and I worked in London at a hospital there. And I think when my children were little, I was doing night shift and weekends and all of those things, and I was quite attached to the need to make money. Mm-hmm. And okay, I've paid off the mortgage of my little house, which I feel very privileged to be able to say, but I started to work fewer hours and more volunteer hours, and the volunteer work is what gives me fills my heart. And and I've every now and then I take a little jump, and even giving up my union work was another jump, to the point where now I can live on very little money, but I'm absolutely doing what I feel is the most important thing that I could be doing right now. And I'm so lucky because my partner Derek grows almost all our own food. So, and we've got a couple of chooks, so when they're laying, we eat eggs. And when they're not laying, we don't eat eggs. And we manage on what we grow, mostly. We try very much to only eat locally. And it's amazing how you can live on so little. And it's so freeing. I just love it. I love my life.
It is. It's freeing. I've just finished reading a book by Mark Boyle, who's the Moneyless Man, and who's going to hopefully be on the radio show. And that was one thing that he said. It's very freeing, giving up the money. So, you have had a lot of benefits, but I guess one thing that when you're driven, at times have you felt frustrated? Or I guess with anything we feel frustrated sometimes.
I think so. I think the biggest thing is to watch your energy.
Yeah.
We can't save the world on our own, that's for sure. But there are some amazing things happening, and I'm very much a part of the 350 movement as well. That's the one that Bill McKibben started back in, I don't know exactly what year it was, but the divestment movement is really big, and it in fact is the biggest divestment movement ever in the world, and it's growing so fast, and it's making an impact, and that's something that everybody can be part of, which is so, so good. And
And for people who are listening, if they're not familiar, do you mean by divestment looking to where you have your earnings or your savings and putting them into different places, or your investments and things like that?
It's really saying get out of anything that is funding the fossil fuel industry, because as we know, we can't keep digging up more fossil fuels. we can't even burn the stuff that we've already got discovered, and those wells and mines that are already started, we cannot let even them finish their life. So this is a massively difficult problem we've got here. And to me, what I think, if everybody understood and really saw things clearly, we'd all do everything we could to maybe just take a break from what we're doing for the next 5 years and just put things on hold, put our research, put everything else on hold if it's not directly related to fixing this issue that we've got with climate change, and just get out there and just stop the fossil fuel industry and build that future. We've got to do, and we've got to make that transition, and we've got to do it as quickly as we can.
Yes, and it's realizing the urgency of the situation, you know. So do you feel that opposing what we don't want, you know, fossil fuel extraction, that that's more important at the moment than creating what we do want? Or do you feel that it all has to be done at the same time?
It all does have to be done at the same time. I think both of those things are becoming more and more urgent. And many of us are doing everything we can in our own individual lives, everything that we can within our means in our own individual lives. But we can be creating beautiful gardens and things, which is fantastic and really important. But if somebody's over here dumping more stuff into the atmosphere, and to the point where we might end up with runaway catastrophic climate change that cannot be stopped, our garden's not going to be able to survive. So yes, we absolutely need to be able to get out of our comfort zones and say no at times to stop these big things happening. For example, the Carmichael mine in the Galilee Basin in Queensland, Australia, which hasn't been built yet, but if that was built, it would be Australia's largest coal mine, and it would basically mean game over for all of us. So we have to stop that. That's our biggest carbon bomb in this part of the world.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, it feels more comfortable and optimistic, and, you know, it's kind of feeds our soul a little bit, you know, to create the things that we want, you know, with our, you know, organic, you know, community gardens and so forth. But really, we've got to make time to do the harder stuff too.
I think so. I've got some lovely stuff going. We've got some land and we're planting lots of trees, and my best thing to do is planting a tree, because you just look at it and you think, that's going to go on for some time.
Yes, and it's sequestering carbon.
Absolutely, it's the right thing to do. You cannot go wrong planting trees. Yeah. So, and the other thing, like, sometimes saying no can be the most positive thing you've done, and the most positive thing you do. I think helping to stop that massive lignite mine that they had planned, that was incredibly uplifting for me, because it was hard work and it felt impossible at times. But it's amazing to think, okay, we've kept that much carbon out of the atmosphere, and these people can have this beautiful farmland and make good things.
Yes, yes. So reminding yourself of what you have actually saved, and the good things that are happening. So, you know, you said that the urgency of the situation, and really for the next 5 years, we all must be turning our attention toward, I guess, changing how we do everything and opposing fossil fuel extraction. What about the people who are directly involved with, who are in the fossil fuel industry? How do you feel about those people?
Well, that's really interesting that you asked that question, because I've got a nephew who's an oil directional driller. And so he's really involved in exploring for fossil fuels. And I've got a niece, actually, who works in one of the big coal mines in the Hunter Valley, driving a truck.
I think that almost all of us have relatives. I know I do. And people I love very dearly who are in. So, yeah. So so it is an interesting question.
It is interesting. And I think that it's really interesting in that we're all humans, we all have some values that we share, and I know for myself that when I am following a path that I know is you know when you're doing something that's against what you believe in, and it feels horrible and it's quite stressful and really difficult. And I feel at this point in my life I'm able to not have that anymore, and it gives you an amazing strength. And so, yeah, I love my niece and nephew. They're great kids. I mean, I was really naughty when Daniel was 2 years old. I gave him his first taste of chocolate, and his mum was a dental nurse, and she was very grumpy with me. So we go back a long way. I really don't like what he's doing, and I really hope he gets out of that. But he's not where I direct my anger. I direct my anger at the industry, and I think that industry has deceived us for many, many years, and they are pushing for short-term profit, but they are, in the meantime, just destroying it all for us and for all of us, and that's not okay. So I will stand up to them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so focusing it on the industry as opposed to, I guess, all of the people who just happen to be working in it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's time that they looked at what they're doing and maybe looked for a better job.
Yeah.
And I'll say that.
Decommissioning. Yeah. That's a great job for people who are in the oil industry.
Hey, there are far more jobs in renewable. There are far
and
more
absolutely,
jobs.
Absolutely. A lot of skills that are transferable.
Absolutely. And the other thing is, people, I also see this. I think that people get completely, what's the word, sort of mesmerized by money and the need to have more and more and more and more. Actually, you don't need them. You don't need to. It's actually much better just having a simple life.
Because we live in a world that feeds us this myth as well and tells us that we need all these things as well, and, you know, that we do. So tell me, you know, coming back to the work that you did, what were some of the most successful strategies, do you think, that you did as your groups? What seemed to work the best in terms of, you know, if someone wants to do some action?
With Coal Action Network, we've just held a summer festival again after a few years without one, and we had our first non-violent direct action where three grandmothers, a farmer and a health student chained themselves to the gate of the Clandeboy milk factory and stopped the milk trucks for about 4 hours, the coal trucks for about 4 hours, and it was actually heaps of fun, and it was a kind of almost carnival atmosphere there. It was a beautiful day, and it was a direct intervention, and we didn't close down Clandeboy factory, and we didn't intend to, but we sent a big message to the company that it's not okay to keep burning coal and to keep increasing coal use, which is what is happening in the dairy industry. And I think a lot of people enjoyed it, and I think it's actually inspiring other people to say, hey, we could do that, I would like to do that. And we're getting a lot of messages from people to say, call me next time you want to do something like that, call me, I'll be there. And I think it's that, let's get doing stuff, let's make a bit more noise, you know. We talk and we give it, we write submissions, we write letters, we, you know, we do all those things, but it's calling for something a bit more immediate now.
I saw a wonderful example, which I thought was wonderful, of a rally where people just stood in silence. And apparently it was very powerful because they weren't actually, you know, marching and shouting and stuff, but they were actually just standing in silence. Mm. And, I forget what it was about, but I thought, wow, that's powerful too. So there's lots of different things, but we really do need to be visible. Maybe it's just about visibility.
We do need to be visible, and we need to have a very careful plan. And there are people in New Zealand now who are very experienced in campaigning and campaign strategy, and so a single event isn't going to do it. I mean, we have to have a plan, and we have to have, basically, we want Fonterra to stop using coal, for example. We want deep sea drilling to cease in New Zealand. And actually, I think we're right on the edge of that. Oh, can I tell you quickly about there's going to be a road trip from the South Island to New Plymouth. There's a oil conference coming up on the 22nd and 23rd of March, and we're taking people from the South Island to up there to a great big rally. From people from all over the country will be there, and it would be wonderful if listeners were interested in coming along. They could email oilfreeotago@gmail.com, or they could even ring me. Shall I give my number?
You can.
So my number
is... You'd be inundated.
Is 022-185-6966. Yeah, we'll be picking up people from Southland, we'll be picking up people from Christchurch and from Nelson along the way, and lots of people from Wellington are going, so we're basically going to have a fantastic time up in New Plymouth.
So are you feeling, like, just from what you're saying, you are feeling a little bit hopeful about the future, that we are perhaps on the cusp of at least ending the deep sea oil drilling, or preventing it from getting going, I should say?
Yes, it hasn't even really got going. Yes, I mean, those guys are in big trouble, and we just need to kick them out, really. We're doing quite well. We've kicked them out of the Raukumura Basin and the east coast of the North Island. Looks like Shell might be leaving New Zealand completely. Statoil, they're just about ready to leave. They just need a bit more of a push. You know, the other companies, yeah, they're not doing well.
Okay. Well, thank you, Rosemary, for the work you do. Anyway.
Thank you, Maureen.
So if people want to get involved, they can go to your Oil Free Otago website, or just email oilfreeotago@gmail.com.
That's right. It'd be lovely to hear from you. I'd love to hear from you.
Right. So thank you, and thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to this show. My guest today was Rosemary Penwarden from Oil Free Otago and Coal Action Network. And I'm Maureen Howard, and this is Eco Living in Action. This show is supported by Sustainable Dunedin City. I hope you can tune in next week, and thank you again for listening.
Sustainable Dunedin City aims to facilitate a positive, secure and sustainable future for Dunedin. We're local people interested in issues of climate change, declining energy security and sustainability. Is there effect our city? Sustainable Dunedin City produces a regular online newsletter of sustainability-related events, hosts regular green drink sessions, and organises the Big Green Challenge. For more information or to join, go to www.sustainabledunedincity.org.nz.